This comes after a number of cases were discovered in Wuhan a few days ago.
So residents of the Chinese city where the pandemic began will be tested again. This is Thursday, the 14th of May, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, China is in a major spat with Australia. Wearing masks or not wearing masks in the United States becomes a political issue. Google and other high-tech giants could be tracking the dramatic changes in where you are and when. And staying at home has led to the Front Steps Project. That and more, coming your way on VOA Asia. Chinese authorities are preparing to test all 11 million residents in Wuhan, the city where the COVID-19 pandemic began late last year. More on that from AP correspondent Ken Mortsugu.
The city authorities in Wuhan are going to require widespread testing, possibly of all the 11 million people who live in the city. Local officials have told local media that they have received instructions to prepare for this kind of testing and something that would have to be carried out over a period of 10 days. This comes after a number of cases were discovered in Wuhan a few days ago, first cases in quite a long time. And this has alarmed local officials who, of course, don't want the coronavirus to come back. There's still a bit of confusion at the local level about what exactly they're supposed to do, but they are launching efforts to try to track down everybody that's in their particular districts and set up testing protocol.
The effort was initiated after a new cluster was discovered. The first local infections the government has reported in Wuhan since before a lockdown was eased in early April. Overall, China reported 7 new cases of COVID-19 Wednesday, 6 of them in the northeastern province of Jilin, where authorities have raised alert levels and suspended rail connections to a county where a cluster of unknown origin has been growing. China has reported a total of 4,633 deaths among 82,926 cases. Conversely, New Zealand reports no new cases of the coronavirus for the second straight day and the fourth day in more than a week. Director General of Health Ashley Bloomfield said it was encouraging news as the country prepared to ease many of its lockdown restrictions starting at midnight. Most businesses, including malls, retail stores, and sit-down restaurants, will be able to reopen. Social distancing rules will remain in place, and gatherings will be limited to 10 people. Thailand has reported no new confirmed cases of the coronavirus for the first time in more than 2 months. There also were no new deaths reported Wednesday. And South Korea has no immediate plans to return to strict social distancing rules after a spike in cases. Vice Health Minister Kim Gung-lip told reporters the government needs more time to analyze details of recent outbreaks before determining whether to change the guidelines. Daily cases had dropped into single digits before spiking to around 30 each day recently. Nightclubs in a Seoul entertainment district were linked to many of the new infections. Clubs in the Seoul area were closed again after the outbreak, and the reopening of schools has been delayed. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo takes another swipe at China over what he says is a lack of transparency. Gaming hardware maker Razer plans to dispense its locally produced masks in Singapore through a network of vending machines. A Cambodian official says human rights need to be put aside to fight drugs that destroy families and fuel violent crime. The World Health Organization dismisses as false allegations a media report that it withheld information about the new coronavirus following pressure from China. Hundreds of protesters flout social distancing rules to mock Chief Executive Carrie Lam on her birthday. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. China's sudden decision to ban Australian meat from 4 major suppliers is being seen as retaliation for Canberra's push for a global investigation into the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's thought to have started at an animal market in the Chinese city of Wuhan late last year. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
China has indicated it will impose an 80% tariff on Australian barley exports. It has also banned red meat from four Australian suppliers that control more than a third of the country's exports to China. Opposition politicians and academics believe the move's a payback for Australia's call for an international inquiry into the COVID-19 crisis. Last month, China's ambassador to Australia threatened a consumer backlash against Australian exports because of Canberra's attempt to garner global support for a probe into the origins of the new coronavirus. But authorities in Beijing this week asserted that Australian agricultural exporters have violated quarantine regulations as well as other health and labelling issues. Australian Trade Minister Simon Birmingham also believes the suspension of meat exports is not linked to the call for a COVID-19 investigation.
Chinese officials, both publicly and privately, are adamant that these are unconnected, and so it's in the best interests of our farmers and exporters for us to treat these issues all on their merits, and certainly from our policy perspective, these are completely unconnected issues. Quite transparently, an investigation around the handling of COVID-19 has no relationship whatsoever to Australian exports of beef or barley.
While supporting a call for a COVID-19 investigation, opposition politicians in Australia believe the government has mismanaged its relationship with China, its biggest trading partner. There is a feeling that Canberra should have quietly sought backing for any global inquiry rather than antagonising China with public pronouncements. Australia's three main export industries, mining, tourism and education, have been dominated by the Chinese. Beijing criticised Australia for banning all flights from mainland China at the start of February in response to the growing coronavirus threat. The bilateral relationship was under strain well before then over allegations of Chinese meddling in Australia's domestic politics and claims of cyber espionage and theft. There are fears that a trade war over the origins of COVID-19 could damage Australian agriculture at a time when parts of the economy have collapsed because of the pandemic. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, analysts predict Asia-Pacific countries with quick improvement in their coronavirus cases will consider forming country-to-country bubbles that would let people travel from one spot to another, but keep restricting people from more heavily infected places. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Our thanks to you for joining us on VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump has avoided wearing masks, despite his administration recently directing White House staff to wear them in line with guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. For Americans, the decision to mask or not to mask has become a political statement in a brewing coronavirus culture war. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swera has this story.
Beginning this week, masks are mandatory for White House employees and visitors after more staff tested positive for the coronavirus, including Katie Miller, the Vice President's press secretary, and wife of White House senior advisor Stephen Miller. President Donald Trump said he was the one who made masks mandatory in the White House.
Well, if they're a certain distance from me or if they're a certain distance from each other, they do. In the case of me, I'm not close to anybody.
Trump has never worn a mask in public, including during his recent visit to a mask production facility. This is what he said last month.
I think wearing a face mask as I greet presidents, prime ministers, dictators, kings, queens, I don't know, somehow I don't see it for myself.
His concern is really about the visual propaganda of what it looks like for the President of the United States to be wearing a mask. I think to him it probably signals weakness.
In early April, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended Americans use a cloth face covering to protect against the coronavirus.
When the vast majority of people actually do that, it does reduce the transmission of respiratory viruses, COVID and influenza. so it has a double benefit. But wearing the mask is absolutely the most important thing you can do to reduce the transmission.
Unlike in some Asian countries where masks are commonly worn for health reasons, many in the U.S. are not accustomed to wearing them. A recent poll shows 79% of Democrats wear masks in public compared to 59% of Republicans.
Open Ohio now!
Suggesting the decision on masks may be influenced by politics, the same politics that drive some Americans to rally against lockdown orders in protests that have been supported by Trump on Twitter. The same group is more likely to believe conspiracy theories that the virus and its mitigation effort is a hoax to bring down Trump. The polarization of public health is a continuation of partisanship that has been deepening in past decades, says Jennifer Masicha.
People who've been prepared for 20, 30 years to understand the world as an us versus them struggle are looking for cues that signal, you know, what is our side's position versus what is their side's position. And so it's really unfortunate that, you know, public safety is at risk because of a partisan agenda.
Trump's mask avoidance has been criticized, including by Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who said the president should be setting an example for Americans during this deadly pandemic. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. A top U.S. government commission on China says lives have been lost in the coronavirus pandemic because of the World Health Organization's exclusion of Taiwan and refusal to allow it to share best practices and information. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. U.S. lawmakers weighed the cost of reopening the American economy on Tuesday, asking the nation's top health experts if the country has the resources to battle the coronavirus while lifting stay-at-home restrictions. More than 2 months into stay-at-home orders, lawmakers are considering yet another massive aid package to address the economic and public health crisis and to get the country running again. VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson, has the story.
As states around the nation begin to relax stay-at-home restrictions, lawmakers get a warning about the costs of failing to wait for a decrease in fatalities.
If some areas, cities, states, or what have you, jump over those various checkpoints and prematurely open up without having the capability of being able to respond effectively and efficiently, my concern is that we will start to see little spikes that might turn into outbreaks.
Even as protests spring up around the country, calling for an end to restrictions, U.S. senators and health experts had to participate remotely because of possible exposure to the virus. And while Democrats wore masks, some Republicans went without, a sign of the increasingly political debate over how to handle the pandemic.
Staying at home indefinitely is not the solution to this pandemic. There is not enough money available to help all those hurt by a closed economy. All roads back to work and back to school lead through testing, tracking, isolation, treatment, and vaccines.
U.S. President Donald Trump says the U.S. has now caught up with other nations.
We've prevailed on testing.
Lawmakers receiving more detail on exactly what that capability will be.
So by September, taking every aspect of development, authorization, manufacturing, and supply chain into consideration, we project that our nation will be capable of performing at least 40 to 50 million tests per month.
Even as the U.S. economy gets up and running, the damage will be difficult to contain. Unemployment numbers are the worst in almost 100 years. But Senate Republicans are urging caution before Congress approves another round of aid.
We're taking a look at what we've already done. We've added about $3 trillion to the national debt. and assessing the effectiveness of that before deciding to go forward.
Democrats say another massive infusion of cash is needed to help essential workers and to restart the U.S. economy.
We must think big for the people now, because if we don't, it will cost more in lives and livelihood later. Not acting is the most expensive course.
Their $3 trillion proposal set to pass the House later this week has no chance of clearing the Republican majority U.S. Senate. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
How dangerous is COVID-19? 80% of the cases are said to be mild. Young and healthy people are at a relatively low risk. Elderly and people with serious health conditions are at risk of fatality. If you have a cough, fever, and shortness of breath, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Now on VOA Asia, the pandemic has kept many people quarantined at home with family and pets for weeks. A grassroots photography initiative called the Front Steps Project has inspired hundreds of photographers to document people in front of their homes during this extraordinary time. Matt Dibble follows one photographer connecting with neighbors in Oakland, California.
My name is Valinda. I am volunteering my time to photograph and document families during the pandemic. And how long have you guys lived here?
28 years.
Wow.
Belinda Ajamet is one of many photographers inspired to create portraits of families sheltering at home as part of an international effort called the Front Steps Project, which documents this extraordinary moment in time.
It gave me purpose, spread kindness, and I can do something that I love to do.
Okay, woo!
With her job as a dental hygienist on hold, Belinda saw an opportunity to explore her longtime dream of being a photographer.
Don't smile.
They've been just in their own little bubble, and so to have somebody come outside and just interact with them and then bring them out.
Oh my goodness, did you see me go like that?
My day job as a hygienist requires me to read people and kind of be flexible in going with what makes them most comfortable.
Yeah. Come here, sweetie pie. Oh my God, are you kidding me right now? Oh my God.
Everyone brings something unique with every photo, which I find really fascinating. I find people fascinating. I think the important part of this also is the documentation for their family. Children will go back, look at my great-grandma. This was during the pandemic, you know, of 2020. Look what they did.
What do you want to do?
The rainbow.
Okay, silly face. Silly face.
This pandemic has kind of slowed everyone down. The light in this whole thing is the reconnecting of the basics of humanity with each other, and that's what I like about it.
Participants receive their portraits free of charge, and in return, they're asked to donate or give back to their community in some way. For VOA News, Matt Dibble, Oakland, California.
Nearly 2.5 million Afghans live in Pakistan as either registered or undocumented refugees. Their lives have been upended by the coronavirus lockdown, but they seem to be getting little attention. VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports from Islamabad.
This is an Afghan refugee settlement in Islamabad. It doesn't have electricity or other basic facilities. Most people here depend on day work for their living. As the novel coronavirus spread and the country went into a partial lockdown, their livelihoods were nearly destroyed.
These people hardly made $3 to $4 per day. Some of them picked up paper from the streets or trash for recycling. Some worked as motorcycle mechanics. All of them are now sitting at home.
An estimated 800 families, or around 5,000 individuals, live in the settlement. Many of them work at the nearby vegetable market.
Ever since the coronavirus has spread, the authorities don't allow us to gather inside the market. We wait along the roadside all day long, but no one gives us work.
Refugees living in other cities tell similar stories. On Tuesday, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees announced a cash assistance program for some of them. A 2-month delay in making the aid available was blamed on a lack of resources.
We realized that we would need money that we did not have. We had to go very quickly to donors to explain this level of intervention that we wanted to do. We needed to get confident that the donors were going to support that.
The UN agency acknowledges that the money, while helpful, is not enough to help everyone in need. In addition, half of the nearly 3 million Afghans living in Pakistan don't have official refugee status and do not fall under the agency's mandate. Meanwhile, in this Islamabad settlement, people have no option but to wait. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Islamabad.
A massive fire broke out early Tuesday in an overcrowded camp that houses nearly 1 million Rohingya refugees in the Cox's Bazar district in southern Bangladesh. VOA's Muazzam Hussein Shakil was there and has more from the scene in this report narrated by Behzad Hamdard.
A quiet Tuesday morning suddenly ended when rapidly spreading flames broke out after a cooking gas cylinder exploded in the massive and overcrowded Rohingya camp in southern Bangladesh. Moments later, flames raced through neighboring shanties where residents live and work in makeshift homes and shops.
My house is completely burnt. There's nothing left. I was out of the house when the fire broke out. I can't even go home due to the fire. I can't find my children. I don't understand how it happened. I can only see that many houses are burning in front of me.
Witnesses say firefighters arrived quickly, but the blaze managed to damage more than 600 houses.
Probably the fire started from the explosion of a gas cylinder. A total of 312 makeshift houses have been completely destroyed by fire. Another 362 houses were partially damaged. We are collecting more information. We will let you know all later.
According to VOA's Muazzam Hussein Shakil, who was on the scene, about 20 people suffered injuries, with at least 6 reported to be in critical condition. For Muazzam Hussein Shakil in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, Behzad Hamdard, VOA News.
As governments and communities around the world respond to the COVID-19 pandemic, Google and other high-tech giants have been tracking the dramatic changes in the mobility of people as they cope with lockdown measures. Reporter Veronica Balderas-Iglesias talked to residents in and around Washington, D.C. to find out where people are going these days and why.
This mobile commuter store in Northern Virginia was once very busy, selling public transportation tickets to around 200 people on the first week of every month. COVID-19 changed that.
Yesterday, we have one customer. If we don't have no sales, it's affecting us economically and with a big impact.
With fewer people commuting to work, visits to transit stations in Virginia dropped 52% in April compared to the pre-pandemic period. This, according to Google's COVID-19 Community Mobility Report.
I usually take the train every morning, but instead I've been using Uber, so if anything, that's been affecting my wallet more.
Visits to grocery stores, other retail operations, and recreation areas also remain low.
Now I just go once a week with car to get staples to last me for the week.
How has that impacted your eating habits, your diet?
Well, not very well. I'm home all the time eating a lot.
That's not what restaurant owners like to hear.
We're at like maybe 10% of like the business that we had. We've gone from a sit-down restaurant to a to-go restaurant. We're trying to employ everybody as much as possible by trying to do deliveries as well.
While the District of Columbia's Google chart showed a decrease of 77% in visits to parks, plazas, and public gardens since the pandemic reached the United States, those places were not completely empty.
We walk and we go to green spaces because all of the playgrounds and any sort of surfaces or facilities are closed.
Yet, in residential areas where authorities want people to spend most of their time, confinement raises concerns.
When I walk in my lobby, I'm sharing elevators and stuff like that with residents. We actually just found out that someone on staff in our apartment building was tested positive. So I think before then, I felt like I was in a safe bubble.
However, mobility restrictions are still considered the most effective way to prevent the spread of COVID-19. All eyes now are on those states that are beginning to ease them. For VOA News, Veronica Valderas Iglesias, Washington.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please enjoy your day.